All right, welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Manizza.
Good morning.
You're here.
I am.
So exciting.
Is that exciting?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. So, you know, when every year I go to that New Hampshire Association of Naturopathic Doctors Convention, and I get downloaded with so much information. It's so awesome. It's 2 days of nonstop naturopathic goodness.
Yeah, so are you fully doused in it?
Well, you know what I have to do. I fully doused you. It's really rather overwhelming, and I'm really glad that then after that I get to chill out with my friend Rob up in Greater Lincoln and Woodstock, New Hampshire. So that's kind of fun. And I get to go on some very nice hikes and take some really pretty pictures. And the last couple of years, we've been going to Lincoln Woods. It's kind of an easy hike. It's out and back. We can take the dog. It's nice. So meanwhile, I keep getting downloaded with this information. I talked about a bunch of things that I learned last week. And I wanted to talk about a few more things this week because they're interesting things. So one of the cool things is that sometimes I get to see my professors from Naturopathic College. Now, mind you, I graduated from Naturopathic College in 1995. So some of the professors are still kicking. And, you know, some of them are a little bit older than me and they're still kicking. And they come to the conference and they lecture. And that's very cool. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm sitting here. It's like it's 25 years ago, and I'm sitting in Dr. Tom's class. How funny is that? And he's the same guy, and to me, he doesn't look that different, which I guess means he aged well. And he's a very smart man, and he knows a lot of stuff.
It's probably all that good natural medicine stuff. You know, they took care of themselves.
Exercise and veggies. In Dr. Tom's case, he has excellent oral hygiene.
Okay.
Well, because he's a dentist. Before he's a naturopath, he was a dentist.
Okay.
So he's really big on, and he gave a great talk on holistic medicine and dentistry.
Hmm.
So there were a few things that he talked about. One of the things I'm going to repeat, I don't know if I said it last week, but he doesn't think fluoride is terrible.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know how a lot of people who are interested in natural medicine, they're absolutely anti-fluoride. And there's some controversy as to whether it's fluoride that keeps you from getting cavities. So I go back and forth with my dentist, the beloved Bernie Shafarik, about this, and my beloved hygienist, Kim O'Keefe. Holla. Anyway, so we go back and forth. And Dr. Shafarik, I will admit, ultimately convinced me to use a product that had a little bit of fluoride in it. Now, before you fall over and go, you naturopath, you, how could you?
What's with that?
Okay. So here's the deal. When I was listening to Dr. Tom said there are studies that show that if you use topical fluoride, you get less cavities. That's just true. Whether fluoride is toxic for you is another issue. So his idea is that if you're using topical fluoride, so if you're using it in a toothpaste, as long as you don't swallow the toothpaste, you're going to get a very, very minimal amount of fluoride in your body. And if you're putting it on your teeth, it's going to adhere to your teeth and do its job. The issue comes when you start swallowing fluoride. So if you have a little kid who thinks that her fluoride toothpaste tastes really good and she starts eating it, that is a problem, and that's when you can get fluorosis. He's also not a big fan of fluoridating water. Now, that's something that dentists can argue about, because when you get too much fluoride in your body, fluorosis can occur. Aside from all the other things that are concerning about fluoride and the kind of fluoride that they put in water, that's a byproduct of industry. So when you're drinking your fluoride and you're getting fluoride treatments and you're a kid and you're swallowing fluoride toothpaste, that's a problem. So when you're a kid, and especially when your bones are forming, you can get fluorosis, where fluoride will enter into your bones along with other minerals. And if you have too much fluoride in the substance of your bones And in your teeth, the bones and teeth become brittle. So that is an issue. So too much fluoride is a problem. A little bit of topical fluoride in your toothpaste is not a big deal and, in fact, can help prevent cavities. Mind you, he did not neglect to remind us about calcium phosphate. So calcium phosphate, so if you get rinses that have calcium glycerophosphate in it or toothpaste that have calcium phosphate in them, those are good things. So calcium phosphate has definitely been studied to help to re-enamel your teeth because, you know, you want your teeth to mostly be made of calcium. That was a very interesting thing. I'll repeat, too, the thing that I talked about last week. Did you know that your teeth, you know how people want really white teeth?
Yeah, what's with that?
People,
not natural.
People, that's right. That's exactly right. Guess what color? So guess what color your teeth are really supposed to be?
Color of bone, right?
They're a little yellow.
Yeah.
Why are they a little yellow? Because dentin, the dentin is what you see underneath the enamel, mm-hmm. is a little yellow.
Okay.
And what color is enamel?
It's clear.
You got it.
Right.
You know this. I'm so impressed.
It's okay. I guess I never really thought about it.
That's exactly right. Enamel is clear.
Yeah.
So you get stains on your teeth because the enamel gets stained when you eat your blueberries and you drink your coffee and you drink your tea and you eat your food. So if you use a little bit of abrasive, you can get that off. But you want to be continually enameling your teeth. So if you have a product that has calcium phosphate in it, that can help. And as you get older, sometimes you need more calcium phosphate. You need something that you can leave on your teeth. You're not going to just brush your teeth. You're going to be getting into rinses, and there are natural medicine rinses for your teeth. You can get them at health food stores and online that they're holistic products and they have calcium phosphate in it, and you have to sit and hold them in your mouth for like a minute. And there are different rinses that have that. There are health food store products you can buy that will have calcium in them, calcium phosphate. They'll have, and not necessarily fluoride. And I think those rinses are a fine thing. And they'll also have nice antimicrobial herbs in them. I have a rinse that has it has mint and it has, you know, peppermint and it has echinacea and it has thyme oil in it and aloe, all things that can get rid of the extra bacteria in your mouth and also break down the plaque. And then xylitol is helpful for breaking down plaque. Now, the interesting thing about Dr. Tom is he's not a big xylitol fan. Yeah. Even though xylitol is known to break, its big job is it breaks down biofilm. So if you're a bacteria, you're not going to do very well in the presence of xylitol, which is why, you do those nice xylitol nasal sprays. You're going to be killing bacteria. You're going to be breaking down biofilm, and you're going to be less likely to be sick because viruses need water droplets and they need bacteria to ride on to hang out and start growing in your nose and in the back of your throat. So if you're hitting your nose and the back of your throat with a bunch of xylitol as well as salt and grapefruit seed extract all the time and then those other herbs, you're probably not going to get a cold because you're going to be cleaning them all the time. And, you know, given that you have a 48-hour window from when you're exposed to the virus to hit them, then if you're hitting them every, 12 to 24 hours, you might be less likely to get cold. So that's kind of a nice thing. Meanwhile, re-enameling your teeth is something that will happen with calcium phosphate. And there are toothpastes out there that are intended for not just brushing, but you can actually put them and leave them on. Even if those toothpastes have a little bit of fluoride in them, you're putting them on topically and you're not swallowing them. So they're going to sit there and they're going to adhere to your teeth and they're going to make it so you get less cavities. Now, if you're doing a fluoride treatment, which Dr. Tom doesn't think is necessary, if you're doing a fluoride treatment and you're drinking fluoridated water and taking fluoride pills and have fluoride in supplements, that's overkill and could lead to fluorosis. And fluorosis, as we said, if you get too much fluoride in the body of your teeth, then the teeth become more brittle. But if you're putting fluoride on the surface of your teeth, fluoride, as well as calcium phosphate, gets into the lacunae, the little spots in your teeth. And it blocks them up so the bacteria can't get in. That's how it works. And you know, that wears off about every 24 hours, which is why, you know, you have to apply some kind of toothpaste every 24 hours or some kind of a rinse that you're going to hold in your mouth and you're going to spit out. All right. So if you're, even if you have a rinse, you know, a mouthwash rinse that has a little fluoride in it, if you rinse it and you do not swallow it and you spit it out, that I might not, if it has fluoride in it, I would probably not gargle with it, even though it may have some antimicrobial herbs to help prevent your colds. If it's got fluoride in it, I wouldn't gargle with it because you don't need the fluoride in the back of your throat. You need it on your teeth. So if you have a mouthwash rinse that you hold in your mouth for a minute, I would leave that in the front of your mouth, do your swish, hold it for a minute, and then spit it out because you don't want to get the excess fluoride. Some people are going to go, no way, I'm not doing fluoride at all, and that's your choice. And I would say to you, then I would seek out, you know, toothpaste, natural toothpaste that have calcium phosphate in them. And there's also the MICPP paste that has calcium phosphate in it, and it comes in fluoridated and non-fluoridated, and you can leave that on. The only issue with the CPP MI paste is that it has a casein protein. So if you're dairy allergic, you can't use it. But the dairy is a good source of calcium. Not that dairy is a wonderful food for people to eat, but it does have calcium in it. And, you know, if you use calcium-based products and you put them on your teeth, they can help to re-enamel your teeth.
But you could also get calcium from nuts and seeds, beans.
If you eat them.
Yeah.
If you, yes, right. If you eat those.
If you eat them, right.
Right. So that's another issue. Eating calcium won't necessarily rebuild your teeth because your teeth are your teeth. That so you have to so when you're talking about rebuilding your enamel, you're talking about a topical process. So you're not really going to get it from from eating food. Taking calcium from food is going to help you to rebuild your bones. And of course, when you do that, it's at least as important to take an adequate magnesium because calcium by itself is brittle, and magnesium is what will give you the nice supple healthy bones. So you need at least as much magnesium as calcium when you're rebuilding your bones. It's a fallacy to think that you should only have calcium to rebuild bones. So this started out with reminding you about the fluoride. That was an interesting thing. Here is an interesting thing about the circadian cycle. Dr. Tom thinks that you should go to sleep between 10 and 11 p.m. and rise at 7 to 8 a.m. And that optimally, if you look at optimal organ function and the time that the body heals, and you look at the Chinese clock, there is a Chinese clock it's really interesting. So Chinese clock, based on times of day, the different organ functions are, the different meridians are active, and the liver has activity kind of early in the morning, like before most people would wake up. And at that time, you want to be sleeping because you want the liver to be doing detoxification. There's a lot of healing that happens overnight, which is why one of the reasons you sleep is so that your body can regenerate and repair itself. So optimally, based on the Chinese clock and what happens with various organ systems, you're supposed to go to bed at like between 10 and 11 p.m. and rise between 7 and 8 a.m.
In a perfect world.
Not only in a perfect... So I questioned that because my understanding was that people vary in their circadian cycles. So I kind of looked into that and found that people, in fact, do... Because I understood that there was three basic circadian types, that there's the type... And the majority of people are what Dr. Tom said, and I'm one of them, that you want to wake up between 7 and 8, and you want to go to sleep between 10 and 11. And if I do that, I feel really good. And as you said, in a perfect world, you often don't get to do that. People who are larks... So they you talk about larks and owls. So people who are what I am and what most people are, the highest percentage of people are what Dr. Tom said. They feel good when they wake up between like 7 and 8 a.m. and go to sleep between 10 and 11 p.m., which means that a lot of people are not following their circadian cycle. They're going to bed too late and they're getting up too early, or either or both. Meanwhile, there, as we said, there's genetic variation in circadian cycles. There are some people who are larks, that is, that they can get up at, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, and they feel fantastic, and they tend to go to sleep earlier. The thought there is that there are variations that people's circadian clocks are not necessarily 24 hours. that some people's clocks run less than 24 hours. So if you run less than 24 hours, you're going to tend to be an early bird and you're going to want to wake up earlier. Some people's clocks run slower than 24 hours. That means that, you know, if they've had a day, they're going to need more time to rest. They actually need more sleep than the 24 hours cycle gives them. So they're going to tend to be night owls. So that's interesting. So and that there are genetic differences in people. So to say, you know, flat out that everybody should, you know, wake up at 7 and 8 a.m., between 7 and 8 a.m. and go to bed at 10 and 11 a.m.
Doesn't work
because no. There's a lot of people who are early birds and you see them in your spin class.
Oh, do I ever. And they're all really awake and really excited to be
and
there.
And you're not one of them.
I am not one of them.
No,
you. So I have to work on it. I have to struggle with it. I have to get actually up extra early to get myself going. I need extra time to actually wake up.
Well, and you're probably the same as me. You're that 7 and 8 a.m., 10, 11 p.m.
Well, I would be better if I went to bed earlier. But
right.
I think and if you talk to the people that are in the spin class that are coming in for a 5:45
o'clock.
They're in bed at 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
They're like, you know, they're crashed out. They're done.
Right.
You know, their day is over. So they've got plenty of sleep and they have no problem with just arising at 4 a.m.
Yeah. And some of them, like I said, may have a shorter than 24-hour circadian clock. That's the point of this. But getting enough sleep is important. And the big thing about getting enough sleep is that as your body regenerates, that's what happens. A lot of things regenerate while you're sleeping. So that was interesting. That was an interesting point that Dr. Tom made, and I took a little exception to it. It's true. That schedule works for most people. But there are a lot of people who it doesn't fit because there are genetic differences in what people, when people feel good when they go to sleep and rise. Okay, so there's another interesting thing. What's the best time to take your thyroid medicine?
I haven't a clue.
So this is interesting. So first of all, back up. What's thyroid? What's your thyroid? Thyroid is this gland in your body that controls all of the metabolism in every cell in your body. And thyroid hormone attaches to every cell in your body. So it's really, really important. Some people's thyroids underfunction, and they may be underfunctioning for a variety of reasons. It could be genetic. It could be nutritional. It could be that they have toxins in their bodies. It could be that they have an autoimmune condition like Hashimoto's thyroiditis that's making it so their body doesn't work well. But in a lot of these cases, they're going to need to take thyroid hormone. Some people, for whatever reason, whether they've had nodules or even cancer, have had part or all of their thyroid excised, taken out. So they're going to need to take thyroid medicine, thyroid hormone, to replace the thyroid medicine, the thyroid hormone that's not being made by the thyroid that is absent. So people are taking thyroid hormone for various reasons, you know, all of which are they're hypothyroid for one reason or another. So you would think because thyroid gives you energy and it runs the it runs your circadian or it runs your metabolism and it runs every cell in your body, that you ought to take it first thing in the morning, preferably at least in half an hour to 1 hour before you eat so that all of the thyroid medicine can get in. I have an endocrinologist friend who thinks that you should take your thyroid medicine 4 hours away from food. That's going to give you great insurance as to that all of that thyroid medicine getting in. That's impractical for a lot of people. But it is a good idea to take that thyroid medicine with nothing in your stomach. So that way it can go in, it gets absorbed in the stomach, there's nothing in there to interfere with it, and you're sure you're getting the full benefit from it. There were studies on whether people, you know, when people ought to take their medicine. So there are certain things that interfere with thyroid medicine. So if you take your thyroid medicine, and you take it at the same time as you eat a meal that has soy in it, especially soy milk, which has concentrated isoflavones, those isoflavones are going to help to prevent you from absorbing that thyroid medicine. I actually saw that with a patient who was having a breakfast with soy milk in her cereal. She was taking her thyroid medicine at the same time, and she couldn't understand why she was so tired and sluggish. I said, don't do that. Stop having soy milk with your breakfast. So she did and got all better. That was very exciting. The other thing is dairy, milk. If people want to have their coffee and they have milk with their coffee and they take their thyroid medicine, the milk will interfere with thyroid absorption. So you want to take your thyroid medicine far away from dairy. So there is a suggestion that it's a good idea to take your thyroid medicine at bedtime. And Dr. Tom was a big fan of that. He said that there's a study that shows that they check people and people get the best benefit if they take their thyroid medicine at bedtime. So you probably shouldn't have a glass of warm milk at bedtime if you're going to take your thyroid medicine. So here is an abstract from JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, December 13th and 27th, apparently, 2010. It's a few years old. Effects of evening versus morning levothyroxine intake, a randomized double-blind crossover trial, which means that they had people, they divided the study in two, and they had half the people taking the thyroid medicine in the morning and half in the evening, and then they crossed them over and switched the groups to see how it worked. And so what they did there, they used 90 patients, and they were available for analysis. And they found that compared with morning intake, direct treatment effects when levothyroxine was taken at bedtime were a decrease in thiotropin level of 1.25. In other words, their TSHs went down, which is a good thing, that your TSH is the thyroid stimulating hormone. If you take your thyroid medicine at night, they would have improvements in their TSH, which is a marker of whether you're still hypothyroid. TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. It is okay. The hormone that comes from your pituitary gland, and it stimulates your thyroid to work. If your thyroid is under functioning and you are hypothyroid, your TSH will go up. It has an inverse relationship with how much thyroid hormone you have. So your TSH will rise if you're hypothyroid, if your thyroid is under functioning. Anyway, so in this study, the people, when they took their thyroid medicine at night, their TSHs went down. So that was a good thing. And not only that, they had improvements in their T3 and T4 levels. So this is a study where they actually studied it with 90 people. So if you are hypothyroid and you're still not feeling good and you're taking your thyroid medicine in the morning and or with milk, you might want to change it up, and you can take it at bedtime. It doesn't say here how long after they had eaten. It's probably a good idea to leave an hour between your last meal and when you take your thyroid medicine. But there's nothing about it keeps you up at night. So that was very interesting. Take your thyroid medicine at night and it will actually work better for you. How cool is that? Because everybody wants more energy, right?
Always.
Yeah. So Dr. Tom's thinking is also that there are people who are being treated for their thyroid and then the real problem is their adrenals. So, that's something to take up. That's a great thing to take up with your naturopathic physician, because we can certainly help you support your adrenals. And I certainly do that. When people are hypothyroid and they come in and they're still tired and their doc doesn't want to change their dose and they don't particularly want to come off their medicine, or I have to convince them, no, you don't want to come off your medicine because you're too hypothyroid, I'll work with them on their adrenals. I'll give them adrenal herbs, adrenal tonics, talk to them about lowering cortisol. How do you lower cortisol? You do restorative activities. You take naps. You do less stuff. You do crafts, you do things that make you happy, you laugh, you watch funny movies, you lie around, you hang out with your pets, you hang out with children in a fun way, you have intimacy, you hold hands, you do yoga, all kinds of cool stuff. So lowering your cortisol is always a good thing. And surprise, surprise, if you do restorative activities that make you feel good and make you feel rested, you feel better. That's been studied. Yeah. So anyway, So the other thing that Dr. Tom brought up is that stress is not necessarily bad. When you have a belief that my body is rising to meet the challenge, you're more likely to survive a stressor. So if you have a positive belief about whatever's going on with you, that I can do this, you know, you take take a warrior stance. That I can do this, my body's rising to meet the challenge. Even though you're stressed, you're more likely to survive it and have a good outcome. So that was interesting. I think we talked about this last week. If you can't repeat an activity that you did after resting 10 minutes, you did too much.
That's kind of a no-brainer.
Well, it sort of is, but how would you like to tell that to a marathon runner? You just ran a marathon. If you can't do another marathon after 10 minutes, you did too much.
Why would you do another marathon after 10 minutes?
Well, some people do ultra marathons.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
And also your spin class, for example. So say you've done a hard spin class with a lot of intervals. Could you wait 10 minutes and do it all over again? Probably not.
No, so not if you did it effectively.
Right. So he would say that that's too much. He's also not a big fan of CrossFit.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a number of issues that go along with CrossFit.
Yeah. And other, you know, very high intensity. Yeah.
There are some problems with it.
So what he said was very interesting. He really is a big believer in functional medicine and functional activity, that he doesn't see where CrossFit is functional, that there's no reason in your life unless you're, unless you have to haul heavy logs for some reason, there's no reason why you need to be lifting 300 pounds.
Right, unless you're looking to, you know, bulk up on muscle or whatever, but what are you doing it for?
Right, exactly.
Is there a purpose for it?
That's his point. And so, of course, what do you say to people who are power lifters and that's their sport?
I think their purpose is because they like the way they look when they do it.
And they like the way they feel. And they like the challenge. Why do people do anything? Sometimes the people do things because it's a challenge. So I'm not saying that Dr. Tom is right. I'm bringing this out as as an interesting point. And I think Dr. Tom has a point that if you are doing an activity and you can't repeat it again after 10 minutes of rest, it might be too much. And I certainly do activities that I couldn't do after 10 minutes of rest. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, it'd be, I can ride my bike 100 miles. But would I ride my rest for 10 minutes and do it again? No. Could I do another 40 miles after? Well, I probably could do 40 miles after 10 minutes of rest, depending on the pace.
You probably could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So depending on the time of year and stuff.
Right.
It depends on your fitness level. But that's another, that speaks to developing your fitness. But it's the point that's there is you don't want to overstress your body. You want your body, you want to be kind to your body, and you want to do activities that you enjoy and that are a challenge. And you also can, recover from, whether you believe this specific idea that you should be able to repeat it after 10 minutes rest is one thing. I do believe that, you know, it's okay to challenge your body at times. I think people don't challenge their bodies enough. I have to beg patients to go for any kind of a walk and do any kind of exercise. Exercise is one of the first health things that people tend to jettison, followed by, frequent trips through drive-thrus of various kinds for their food and caffeine needs. I do believe that people don't rest enough, and that's true. Whether you believe in that statement or not, people do need to rest after they do a lot of activity. And people, whether they're exercising or not, people are certainly not getting enough rest in their lives. People's lives are too full. They don't have enough support. They don't get enough vacation. Don't get enough downtime. They don't get enough time. They're always doing things and not getting enough time to recuperate in their lives and just enjoy life. I had a couple days ago, I had somebody come in to say to me that he was getting to be a certain age and he was wondering about what's next. And I was thinking to myself, gee, what's next? That's unfortunate, because sometimes in your life, there doesn't have to be a next. You can just enjoy your life. It's really okay to just sit on the porch and drink iced tea, or sit on your couch with a book and a cat and drink a cup of tea. Does he see where this tea thing is going? Or go to the cafe and just sit with your friends and enjoy. You don't always have to be challenging yourself to do something. I know there are people who that's what they're all about. They were always needing to challenge themselves to do something. But you don't have to spend all of your time doing that. It is a perfectly fine thing to spend some time actually enjoying being a human, actually enjoying being in your body, lying around, reading a book, doing something just for the pleasure of it, and not worrying about what the next thing is. I remember when my mom asked me to, she asked me, she said, I had left my fiance, and she said, it's time for you to go to grad school. I said, I don't want to go to grad school right now. I don't know what I want to do. And that patience paid off because I started paying attention to what I might like to do. And because I waited until I was ready, naturopathic medicine came to me. And when I saw that, I really wanted to do that. So sometimes waiting and being patient and being happy right now, if you're looking to do something else in your life, those opportunities will come while you're waiting and being patient. Meditation is a wonderful thing. And I don't just mean meditation, actual meditation where you sit and you breathe and you let go of thoughts and just be. That's a fabulous, fantastic practice, as is things that put you into meditative state, like yoga and Tai Chi and energy work and Qigong and craniosacral therapy, all those wonderful things, anything that puts you into a meditative place. And if you can be patient, the right stuff will often come to you, not because of something magical, but there is some magic to it, but because you're in a state of awareness and you'll be paying more attention. If you're always busy doing things, it's very hard to pay attention to the world around you and see what's going on. It's kind of a Ferris Bueller thing. He said that, right? You got to stop and take a look around because you might miss stuff, right? It's something I'm paraphrasing, but he's not wrong. It was the 80s, but the boy was not wrong. That if you're always doing, you're going to miss stuff. And if you're looking for the next thing in your life, sometimes the next thing in your life is to chill out, just be, hang out. Take time to take downtime. So thank you to Dr. Tom for bringing that to us. So another thing you said is laughter is good for you. There's a shock. So why laughter is good for you? Why laughter is good for you. Okay. So laughter is good for you because it literally does some very nice things for your body. When you laugh, and you get yourself to laugh. Do you know there's laughter yoga? You can go take classes where all you do is laugh. They don't show you funny movies or anything. You just, somebody starts laughing, that like the leader will start laughing, and then everybody starts laughing, and you all laugh together. And it's really good for you and it improves your health. So funny is awesome, right? So why is laughter good for you? Do you have any idea why laughter is good for you?
Well, it does good things for your endorphins. It makes you, it gives you happy things in your brain.
It makes you have endorphins. That's one of the things it does.
Happy things.
It actually improves your health. It draws people together. I'm guessing that it increases oxytocin. I'm not 100% sure about that one, but it relaxes your whole body. It reduces tension and stress. And I gotta believe it enhances oxytocin, because when you share a laugh with somebody, you feel closer to them. You know, it's a good bonding thing. And guys, or people, if you're wanting to find a partner and you're on the dating scene, make your date laugh. Say something funny, because funny, I think funny is hot. Funny is sexy.
Do I make you laugh a lot?
Pretty much. I remember when I first got with Ron Coleman.
Or do I have to work on that?
when I got with Ron Coleman years ago, the thing that got me about him is he made me laugh. He made me laugh hysterically. I thought he was so funny. That's how he got me. Mm-hmm. He was very smart, but he also made me laugh.
Right.
It's a requirement. You have to be. You got to have a sense of humor. You got to be a little self-deprecating and have some humor. You can't take the world too seriously. And yes, it is very helpful. If you want to be around me, you got to be a little silly.
Silly's good.
Silly's good. It is silly, and it's literally silly. Why? Because laughter relaxes your whole body. It reduces your tension and stress. Your muscles can be relaxed for like 45 minutes after. It helps your immune system because it reduces your stress hormones. It actually increases immune cells and infection-fighting antibodies. That guy Norman Cousins wrote that book. He watched old Three Stooges movies, and that's how he helped himself get out of cancer from that. Mm-hmm. When you laugh a lot, it improves your resistance to disease. How cool is that? Like you said, it literally triggers the release of endorphins, which are your feel-good chemicals. They reduce pain, they increase well-being, and they chill you out, all kinds of cool stuff.
And you get lots of them from exercise, too.
Yeah, endorphins. Yes, you do. Oh, of course. Also, laughter is good for your heart, and it improves endothelial function, which is the function of the inside of your blood vessels. Now, if I said to you, it improves endothelial function, you would be bored. But because I said the word endothelial, like I know you're all going, what the heck is endothelial function?
I'm sure you're going to tell us in a minute.
Yes. Well, the endothelium is the lining of your blood vessels, and you want your endothelium to function well. You want it to be supple and soft and expand and contract well so that the blood can get through it more easily.
You don't want it to be all hard and plaquey.
You got it. Mm. Exactly right, because then it could break, and then it could block the circulation
and
to important
have, like,
places.
Major problems, right.
Yes, like strokes and myocardial infarctions, which we don't want.
No.
So laughing can help protect you against getting a heart attack.
Yay.
Right? And a stroke and like that.
I think we should laugh more.
Guess what else
it
does?
So we should have more like comedies. You know, there should be more like comedies. Why is all this, you know, I look at our television schedule and it's just all this serious
stuff.
A
lot of serious stuff, but there's funny stuff too.
Serious, but there's too much serious stuff. There should be more funny stuff.
I watch sitcoms. I watch a lot of sitcoms. I watch a lot of silly stuff.
I know, but I don't know. Just saying.
That's why I like CBS. CBS has a lot of sitcoms. They're the comedy, where I go for comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laughter burns calories. All right. So if you're looking to lose some weight,
You know why?
Because you're moving all kinds of muscles
and stuff. Because you're ha, ha, ha. You're jiggling and your diaphragm's going up and down. And you're,
you'll still burn more calories in spin class, but if you... But if you laugh for 10 to 15 minutes, it can burn 40 calories. How cool is that?
That's pretty
cool. It's another reason to laugh. If you laugh, you'll be less angry. And angry is hard on your body. It's not, if you need to be angry for a good reason, then be angry. But angry is not a thing you should be for a long time, because that's chronic anger is bad for your cardiovascular health and for all kinds of health. Looking at things from a funny side can really help you to be healthier, and it makes you less angry, and then, you know, you don't have the negative side effects of anger. And if you laugh a lot, you live longer. People with a sense of humor outlive people who don't laugh as much. Look how old Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner are.
Yeah.
They're all Tuckers.
and then you look at some of the other older comedians and like Jack Benny and George Burns.
They lived to ripe old ages.
They
yes, they
very
did.
Very ripe old ages. Yep.
Yes, and those guys you see at the community center.
Yes, we have our local laughing characters.
Yes, that's true. So it boosts immunity, it lowers your stress hormones, makes you have less pain, relaxes your muscles, prevents heart disease, adds joy and zest to life.
Maybe we should have a super boost exercise class that requires like lots of jokes throughout the class to get you to laugh more.
Well, you know what you do. So here's a big shout out to my friend Laura Lynch from New Jersey. So I've ridden on rides with her, and I rode on the chocolate bunny ride with her. So the chocolate bunny ride she would have around Easter, and you'd go on the chocolate bunny ride, and she would carry little chocolate bunnies with her. And if you made a rise crack and she liked it, she would give you a chocolate bunny. So you were motivated to say silly things, and you would get prizes. So we could do like a holiday joke session where we'll have a basket of chocolate kisses, holiday kisses, and people will get kisses for every joke they tell. Mm-hmm. You have to approve it. But I could be the kiss deliverer, and you could teach your class, and then I'll help you and deliver the kisses. That would be really funny. And I would actually do a workout at another time that day so I could stand there and be the kiss deliverer. Would that be so funny?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had a friend who I used to ride with. Shout out to Nat Fontaine, who's now living down in, I believe, Rhode Island somewhere. And his trademark was, as we were climbing a very long hill, he would start a joke.
Yeah.
And it was never a short joke. It was always the joke that had to be the length of the hill.
Oh, man.
So you had to kind of stay with him on the hill to listen to the whole joke.
That's a really good idea.
It's really clever.
But
yes.
It's also, it makes you forget that you're climbing a hill. It eases the pain of climbing
exactly
a hill.
That's exactly what it did.
Well, I had to climb, I was climbing the Potato Hill on the Great River Ride, the last bad hill before you get the baked potato. So I decided to sing Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Because what a silly thing to do. I know all the words. And it's kind of there's some funny things in that song. Mm-hmm. And got me up the hill. Good old Jim Steinman and Meatloaf, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe we should have a joke ride.
Right. Joke ride. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. So if you want to have more laughter in your life, you should smile more. You should count your blessings. Be grateful for stuff. When you hear laughter, go where people are laughing and find out what's going on. Spend time with silly people and bring humor into conversations and fake it till you make it and all kinds of stuff. Don't be too serious. Laugh at yourself. Attempt to laugh at situations rather than bemoan them. Surround yourself with reminders to lighten up and funny things happen. Don't dwell on the negative. Find your inner child. All kinds of cool stuff you could do. All right. So that was good.
Okay.
So we had a whole thing about why laughter is good for you. So on now for something completely different, a shout out to Monty Python. Guess what? A lactobacillus strain, a probiotic strain, has been studied to be high in proportion in people who have lower weight. So it's a nice strain that can help with fat loss, we think, or can help you have a lower weight, and is Lactobacillus gasseri. I'm not sure. Anyway, Lactobacillus gasseri, and it's available in certain probiotics, so you want to look for it in probiotic combinations that you find in the store. Lactobacillus gasseri. So that's kind of interesting, and I actually have one. Also, walnuts. Everybody loves walnuts. Do you like walnuts?
I love walnuts.
Yeah, walnuts. They help with. They can help you to be at a lower weight, and they also help with species diversity. So you'll have more diverse probiotic in your gut, and that's a good thing because the more diversity that you have, the more good things the different bacteria can do for you. So lactobacillus is really good for you, but bifido, you have to remember you have to have good quality bifidobacteria in you as well if you're going to get the good immune benefits and detoxification benefits and vitamin-making benefits. You want to have lactobacillus as well as bifidobacteria. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. Mm. All right. So we have a few more minutes, and that was pretty interesting. So there's this vitamin that people talk about. It's biotin. You know what biotin is?
No, what is it? You're biotin. About to tell us, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's considered to be a B vitamin, although people don't call it by a vitamin number name. But it is sort of, some people do call it vitamin B7, but most people refer to it as biotin. It helps with carbohydrate metabolism, with fat metabolism. It helps with making protein for energy production. And it's also a good component of your hair, skin, and nails. So if you're trying to build your hair, skin, and nails, biotin can help with it. It is water soluble, so you need to eat it all the time. It's involved in the metabolism of fatty acids, amino acids, and carbohydrates. So all of your macronutrients, you need biotin to metabolize. So if you have better protein metabolism, you're going to have nicer hair, skin, and nails. It also can help with nerve function. It can help with your blood sugar. It helps to prevent your DNA from falling apart. As we said, hair, skin, and nail health.
We can never have our DNA falling apart.
And you can't make it. It's an essential nutrient, so you have to eat it. You can't, because we don't synthesize it. It's kind of like vitamin C. We don't make it in our bodies. It's in animal products, so it's in liver. Liver.
I don't like liver.
Egg yolks, cow's milk, some fruits and vegetables, and you could take a supplement if you want. It's rare to have a deficiency, but if you don't have enough biotin, it's it can be dangerous. So, it can cause neurological dysfunction. Of course, hair loss and skin rash. And when people are losing the hair, one of the first things we do, we give them extra biotin. And it often doesn't work because biotin deficiency is not why they're losing their hair. Phooey. So you ketogenic people, you're going to be wanting to do gluconeogenesis. You're going to want to make sugar from stuff that's not sugar. And not starch. So you need biotin to do that. So you're when you're doing the ketogenic diet, you're probably eating a lot of animal protein. So you're going to get your biotin from there. And you could take a supplement if you wanted to. It helps with your cells to make energy. And you need biotin when you're incorporating your branched chain amino acids. So the branched chain amino acids, your leucine, isoleucine, and valine, we have people increase those when they want to build muscle mass. So if you have biotin around, that you're going to be able to incorporate those into your muscles better. Fatty acids. If you want to use them for energy, biotin is important. So if you're doing your bulletproof coffee with your MCT oil in it, you need adequate biotin so you can use those nice MCTs that you ingested. Yeah. Also, it's helpful for insulin release. So if you have type 2 diabetes, it's going to be something that's going to help. It helps to lower blood sugar. Because it actually increases insulin production. And so if you take biotin every day, it can lower your blood sugar concentration. So on the one hand, if you take it all the time, it'll lower your blood sugar. On the other hand, if you take it right before you get your blood drawn, it could artificially lower your blood sugar. It's kind of interesting. It's thought to lower the risk of heart disease. So it helps with fat metabolism. And so if you're metabolizing your fat better, you're not going to get as much plaque. And when you have it along with chromium, it can help increase your HDL, which is nice. And it can also help lower your triglycerides. You have to take a lot of it to lower the triglycerides. That's very interesting. That can get pricey, but it is something that can help lower triglycerides. That's interesting, though. That's good to know. It helps prevent cognitive decline. It's needed in your myelin sheath. So those are the sheaths around your blood vessels. So biotin is something they give to people with multiple sclerosis who have damage to their myelin sheaths. That's the basically the cell membrane around your nerve cells. And also, high-dose biotin was seen to reduce disease progression in people with multiple sclerosis. And so they need to do more research about that. But that's an interesting thing. I didn't think of it as something that, helps with neurological conditions. You need it for immunity, too, because you need it to develop your white blood cells. And it's for specific production of specific cytokines like interleukin-1 beta and interferon gamma. And you need those for your immune response. So if you don't have enough biotin, you're going to get sick more. You're going to get more colds and flus and possibly worse. And you need it to make antibodies to protect you from future illnesses. And so it's a really important nutrient. So biotin Adase is an enzyme that helps to recycle biotin, and it's one of the tests that they do when you have a newborn. So there's a list of blood tests that you do when they do the heel stick and you send it off to the state. One of the things they test for is biotin adase deficiency. So if you have that, you're not going to be able to use biotin, and that can be really harmful. There's so many different things that biotin is responsible for. Also, if you don't have enough biotin, you can get more yeast infections, vaginal yeast infections. Mm. So that would be another thing to take to help with your yeast infections. And it reduces inflammation. It can help with allergies. So they did a study on mice with nickel allergies, and they found that the animals made less inflammatory compounds. We already know it helps with hair, skin, and nail growth. It can help with seborrheic dermatitis, which is also known as cradle cap. And, you know, people can have cradle cap, but people can have seborrheic dermatitis later in life, and then it's not exactly cradle cap. But if you use biotin, it can help with hair loss. And I'm wondering if for my patients who come in with hair loss, if I may be underdosing them, that if you're having hair loss, maybe I should be giving you high dose for a while. It can help to prevent birth defects. And even a little bit of low biotin, that can lead to cleft palate. So places where they have a lot of cleft palate, it may be because it may be nutritional. There may be a nutritional component to it. So be grateful if you get adequate biotin in your life, because it reduces risks of birth defects. It helps with, palate deformities can be because of low biotin. It can also bind to histones, which are proteins that fold and package DNA into chromatin. It can help to prevent you from getting cancer. Basically, this is one of the mechanisms. Certain DNA, when you have changes in certain DNA, which is DNA is the foundation protein for all of your cells and producing things in your body. If they go off, if they get damaged, that's one of the mechanisms that you can get cancer. So when you have adequate biotin, you may be less likely to get cancer. Kind of neat, huh?
Kind of neat.
Yeah. So there's biotinidase recycles biotin. So it's important for you to have adequate, and there are genetic anomalies, a number of genetic anomalies that are associated with not having enough. And then there are also genes that attach biotin to other proteins, and so biotin is a really important vitamin. It's considered very safe. It hasn't been you could take like 300 milligrams a day with no toxicity, and I don't usually give my patients anywhere near that. It is water soluble, so you excrete extra. The only thing is that if you take a lot of biotin, it can artificially lower your thyroid hormones. So if you're taking a lot of biotin and you're hypothyroid, your doctor wants to check your thyroid results. It can make you look like you're hyperthyroid, like that your thyroid levels are too high. So if you're taking biotin and you're hypothyroid and you're being monitored for your thyroid levels, you might want to lay off the biotin for a few days to a week before getting your blood drawn. So, yeah. So this is interesting. Lipoic acid competes with biotin for a certain transporter in the intestine. So if you use alpha-lipoic acid for a long time, it can deplete your biotin levels. That's very interesting. So who uses alpha-lipoic acid? Alpha-lipoic acid is very important. It's a wonderful antioxidant, helps to stabilize blood sugar, as does biotin. So you might see a person who's diabetic being given both lipoic acid and biotin at the same time. And the interesting thing is that lipoic acid can suppress biotin. So if you have somebody who's taking alpha-lipoic acid and they start to lose their hair, you might want to have them lay off the alpha-lipoic acid for a while and find another way to get them their antioxidants and blood sugar regulation. And pantothenic acid as well, vitamin B5, can also compete with biotin. And long-term use of certain antibiotics can kill biotin producing bacteria in the intestine. So remember, your probiotics do wonderful things for you. One of the things they do is make biotin for you. And certain anticonvulsants like carbamazepine, which I've seen which patients come in on, they inhibit the absorption. So if you're using an anticonvulsant for a long time, if it's either primidone, which I don't really see people on, but I do see people come in on carbamazepine, it can reduce your biotin. So it might be a good idea to get more, to take a biotin supplement if you, especially if you're taking that drug and you're losing your hair. So if you do a lot of egg whites, if you're big on egg whites, too many egg whites can inhibit biotin absorption. So if you're a big egg white versus, you know, whole egg, and you eat like a lot of egg white omelets and you start to lose your hair, guess what? could be the too much egg whites.
You did it to yourself.
Well, you could take. You could also take biotin supplements. You could try taking biotin supplements, or you want to back off on the egg whites.
Yikes.
So smoking does a lot of terrible things for you. One of the things it does is it can decrease your biotin. Also alcohol. Surprise, surprise. So that was interesting. So we talked about biotin. It's an interesting nutrient. It can help you with your hair. You want to be careful with taking certain things can lower your biotin and other things can, having your biotin too high is not really a big deal. It's just that it can interfere with some other things like alpha-lipoic acid can interfere with it and antibiotics can reduce your biotin producing bacteria and you can reduce your biotin by eating too many egg whites. So that's kind of interesting. All right. So we had a lot of interesting subjects for you today. I hope you enjoyed it. But I got to go now. And then Ron's going to do Radio Naturopath, which is so great. So I'm going to do my outro. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.